Yo, what's the deal, baby? This your boy, Uncle Luke, formerly of the 2 Live Crew. You are listening to Pass It Down with Mike Silver and Natalie Silver. Natalie is the most beautiful young lady in this deal right here. Mike doesn't look so good, even though they're dad and daughter. It's the big show, baby.
What is up, everyone? We have such a special episode coming at you today. Dad, Mike Silver, you are back from Denver, where you were with the Broncos reporting on the draft. And obviously, a lot went down. There was lots of drama. I'm not super clued in because I was cut out of our family group chat, which I'll get into later.
Ouch.
What's it called? Silvers without conflict?
Reduced conflict, silver something. I didn't name it, but
okay.
It's accurate.
So I really am excited to catch up and hear from Twitter's Most Wanted. But first, I'm saying this because my dad's a little too shy too, but it would really help us out if you guys could quickly rate us 5 stars, subscribe, and get everyone you know to subscribe, because let's be honest, we're the best podcast out there. You guys all know it.
I mean, when Natalie says, first of all, when she says I'm shy, it is very true. This really hurts me to have to like say this stuff, because I'm very bashful. But when Natalie says rate it 5 stars, she doesn't mean do this because we want you to. She means, of course, you believe it is a great podcast.
Right. I would never ask you to do something dishonest.
Right. So rate it what you think it should be, which, of course, is 5 stars.
And if you think it's anything less than 5 stars, don't.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. Now, it is a free country still, that, you know,
but
by the grace of the last election, it is a free country.
And we just really wanted to empower our listeners to reclaim their agency.
It's not hard, right? What you're asking them to do.
It's pretty hard. You scroll down, you have to choose 1 to 5, and that's a big decision. And then, you know,
you could also leave a review.
That's asking a lot. And if you feel so compelled to do that, we might repay you in the future.
Yeah, you might win a prize. Also, download, share, subscribe, tell people.
Tweet about it.
Off social media. Tell them on social media. Tell them what's up, because this is our 50th effing episode.
It's younger than you are.
Yeah.
Anyways.
For now.
So now that we're done being desperate little podcasters,
I feel better that we got that out.
It was hard for us to do, but thank you for just being there with us. All right, so I want to get into it. Elephant in the room, Aaron Rodgers. A lot of drama was happening this past week during the draft, and I was actually clued into this when I was eating dinner with my mom, Leslie Silver, and I was trying to talk to her about important things happening in my life, some job prospects, some social stuff, and she was glued to her phone and not looking me in the eyes and not answering me, and I immediately knew something was up, and I said, "Can I see your phone?" And what do I see? I see the group chat without me, and it's popping off about Aaron Rodgers. So we know that mom was really upset about the Jordan Love pick.
That has been substantiated in previous episodes.
Episode 22.
And later in the Thomas Dimitroff part 2 episode, more recently, yes.
Yeah, and you know, I've transcribed a lot of interviews you've done with Aaron, with Kyle, with Matt. Mm-hmm. And so I know how close Matt is with Kyle, and I'm interested what your take is, because you're obviously so close to it and so deep in it. And I imagine there might be some tension right now. So can you just explain to me, give me the context, what's happening with Aaron, and then what is going on in the Matt-Kyle dynamic?
Kind of bossy for a child. I just get that out there. So obviously Aaron Rodgers is one of the greatest quarterbacks that I've ever seen play. And I've been watching him a long time, being a Cal alum and, you know, someone who really believed in him early on when he was sitting behind Brett Favre and early on when he struggled, and he proved to be just an incredible player. And I know it's hard for outsiders to understand sometimes because they look at Tom Brady. He's won all the Super Bowls and it's incredible, you know, greatest winner we've ever seen. And they look at other great quarterbacks and they're like, well, Aaron's only won one Super Bowl. Is he really that great? How can you say he's that great? All I can tell you is I have access to the best football minds, the players, coaches, GMs, owners, talent evaluators. And in our world, this is not really a debate. I mean, I think maybe now that Patrick Mahomes, you're seeing what he's doing, he would be someone who is in this conversation ultimately. But in terms of how the position is played and what Aaron Rodgers does and can do, he is perceived to be on even a different level than what Tom Brady does. And that's not to freak people out and or take away from the incredible greatness that we've seen from Brady and others year after year. But it really is, he really is that good. And I have for, you know, over a decade been yelling and screaming about how the Packers' organizational philosophy doesn't, you know, match up with what mine would be, which is, wow, we have this crazy window in time where we have this great player and we could aggressively try to surround him with everything. And their attitude, and it goes back to when they had Brett Favre too, is more, hey man, we can stay passive and do it our way and build through the draft and not take chances and it'll all be fine. And it is usually fine because those two transcendent talents have been able to cover up all ills. But over a 30-year period, they only have been to 3 Super Bowls and have won 2. So I would argue that they're underachieving. I know the people in that group chat you referenced, including your brothers, would agree with me. And I know some Packer fans agree with me. Some are more of the, hey, man, he's an employee, shut up mode. But, you know, that's not surprising in today's society. But so I've always been kind of, you know, mindful of this conflict. And it's grown worse since a new general manager, relatively new, Brian Gutekunst, and his boss, Mark Murphy, who is not new. They one aggressive move they made in the 2019 offseason period was to trade up on draft night and take Jordan Love, which in a vacuum isn't a horrible thing. You want to get the next quarterback. This kid had a lot of potential. They probably got value for him. It was fine, but they did it abruptly. They didn't clue Aaron in. And I think most important, they didn't make any efforts after the fact to explain it to him and make him feel, you know, like he was understanding what was going on. And the other thing that's going on is the Packers are a unique organization in that it is the least collaborative organization in terms of involving the coaches in football. In any other building, not that the coach necessarily is going to have final say. Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. But the coach and the GM and the assistants and the scouts, they're all kind of talking and they kind of know what they're doing and how it's affecting the other branch. And this was a case where, and is a case where Matt LaFleur, who we had on earlier, who has done a phenomenal job in his 2 years as coach, doesn't really have decision-making power doesn't really have a great sense of what the front office is doing at any given time, and yet is now in this situation left with the shit sandwich of trying to figure out how he's going to make this work when his best player is obviously snapping.
Wait, so hold on. So when this all happened in 2019, did people know this? Because I know people who are upset, such as my mom.
This is 2020. I'm sorry. April of 2020.
Oh, 2020.
Yeah, my bad.
When this was happening, it seems like Matt was taking a lot of the brunt of the criticism, including from my mom.
Yeah. You know, again, I don't think people understand how different it is in that organization in terms of, and remember, this was a virtual draft. So they were literally detached. Usually Matt and the GM are right next to each other when the pick is made. So they can at least, you know, they were doing it over Zoom. So the Packers would not have the head coach heavily involved in that decision. Most organizations would. Matt is all in on Aaron. He is, you know, they've done great things together in their 2 years. The offense has gone to a higher level. Aaron had an incredible season last year, won his third MVP award. And, you know, Matt believes they can take it to an even different level. And it just doesn't even want to it's really hard for him to think about the fact that he might not have Aaron. So I don't think Aaron blamed Matt. I think Aaron understood that Matt and his assistants were all in, and maybe it was an us against the man situation for him to some degree. But he has clearly snapped, because the timing of these reports coming out on draft night, and he certainly hasn't done anything to refute them, and more stuff has come out. And he's a guy who, when he digs in, I think he digs in. Matt has flown out to LA to hang with him and try to talk to him. Apparently other members of the organization, including, or maybe, you know, Mark Murphy and Brian Gutekunst, have tried that as well. There's a contract issue, but to me, it's gotten really, really bad, and a stare down has commenced, and I don't know how that's going to end. You brought up Matt and Kyle, and that's a really interesting point. And we'll get to Kyle, I know, later, because the 49ers also had an eventful draft. But Kyle Shanahan, you know, brought Matt LaFleur to Houston when Kyle was the offensive coordinator, brought him with him to Washington when he was the offensive coordinator, brought him to Cleveland when he was the offensive coordinator, brought him to Atlanta when he was the offensive coordinator, and then brought his brother to San Francisco, where he was until he just left to go be the offensive coordinator for the Jets this past offseason with Robert Saleh, who Matt LaFleur goes way back with and, in fact, was in his wedding. So it's all very
interesting. So they're friends.
Very good friends. And, you know, the relationship is very much mentor-mentee. Like, Kyle is a very close friend of Matt's and also has been a mentor.
Got it.
And Matt has done great work for him. Now, Matt left to go with Sean McVay the year that Kyle got the 49er job and kind of went off on his own track. But, you know, they're still very, you know, very in tune with each other. So, you know, on draft day, when these reports were coming out and it started becoming clear to a lot of people what I've known, which is these last few months have been horrible for Matt. Just, you know, I mean, obviously not horrible in the world perspective sense. We've all been dealing with worse, but, and certainly, you know, hundreds of thousands of Americans have lost their lives and all that. But in a football sense, it's horrible. He's going from, I have a quarterback that I think is the best ever to play, which is what Matt believes, and now I might not, and I will be judged accordingly, and I don't have really any power to do anything about it. That's a bad place to be. And so as that started to kind of, you know, become public, that's something that I believe that Kyle, as Matt's friend, certainly had an understanding of in private, that the average person did it.
So then what did he do?
Well, so then a report came out that the 49ers had called the Packers, probably not, you know, not Matt, but GM to GM, to see if they could get Aaron in a trade on the morning of the draft. And okay, so now that's weird for two reasons. One, you know, they traded 3 first round picks to get the number 3 overall pick in the draft to pick a quarterback, and presumably the one they were going to pick. They're super excited about it. It ended up being Trey Lance. We'll get into that later. So you're kind of in that mindset, like, we've got our quarterback. It's not like you're a team like, say, Denver, which we'll also get into,
which really doesn't, where you happen to be.
Which really doesn't have a guy where we're like, oh my God, we could get Aaron Rodgers. I mean, everyone wants Aaron Rodgers, unless you're Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes. But, you know, it's a degree of need and want. So it was a little weird that, like, hey, we finally got our guy. We traded up. We're all excited. This is our day. Let's make a commando move to try to get Aaron. I understand that from a football perspective, it just seemed a little, you know, interesting. The second part of that, though, is, you know, if you're my boy and you know I'm going through something and it's hard, and yeah, we're competitors, but we're also, you know, confidants, and you know I'm in a bad place with it, but it hasn't really been resolved yet. And armed with that knowledge, your team then tries to swoop in and do something that would finalize my fate in a really bad way at your expense, if I were Matt LaFleur, let's just say if I were Matt LaFleur, I'd be really, really, really upset about it.
Okay. Just to play devil's advocate though, I mean, this is business, right? Friendship sure. or not. If you're a 49ers fan, don't you want your coach doing everything he can to secure the best player?
Yes, that is absolutely fair. And listen, we live in this culture where, you know, win at all costs, right? Get Georgia to get 10,800 more votes or whatever Trump asked for on that call mm-hmm. and justifies the means. Well, the Patriots might have had cheating scandals, but they won. Mm-hmm. Michael Jordan was insufferable. We all watched him on The Last Dance. He created feuds and took it out on people. But you know what? He was a winner. Yeah. Tom Brady's a great winner. So I understand that consumers believe that that's the only thing that matters. And yes, as the guy running the 49ers, like Kyle, you do have a responsibility to try to have the best people on the field. And if Aaron Rodgers is out there for the taking, you owe it to the organization to inquire. Okay, that's true. But, you know, I've talked to, you know, certain people about this the last few days who know the principles involved, and I'll use one of them because he's a previous guest on the pod and a friend of ours, Jeff Darlington.
Oh, God.
And we had some analogies, and some of them are a little more off color, but they're all good. But, you know, for example, let's say Jeff Darlington was going through some contract stuff at ESPN, which is hard to fathom because he's so good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we all have our times where we got to go through contract shit and it's always a little weird. And let's say it was real bad and the public didn't really know, but I knew because, you know, Jeff's my boy.
Right.
And meanwhile, there's a chance for me to get a job at ESPN, which is just better.
Right.
That I want more. And let's say it'll serve the consumer more to go with your analogy too. And it's probably independent of Jeff's situation, but I know that Jeff's going through this and that it might not work out. And then I just tell my agent this, and my agent then calls, you know, the head of ESPN and says, hey, listen, if you happen to be freeing up some salary anytime soon, you could use that as part of a package to get Mike for this other killer job. Mm. And then I get that job. And yeah, I got a better job. And yeah, maybe the consumers are served because I got that job. But, you know, when I close my eyes at night, I did that to my good friend. And I know I wouldn't do that.
Are you saying there are things more important than football?
I know. It's really weird. So, and I know that if I did do that, Jeff would rightfully be...
Jeff would get his dad to kick you.
Yeah, right. So Jeff Darlington's dad, quick aside, I feel like he's a future Passage Down guest.
We need him now.
See, first of all, I'm a little scared of him because Jeff's mom, who is awesome, does follow me on various social media. And Instagram, Twitter, apparently. And I'm worried that Jeff's dad will somehow take that the wrong way. Obviously, I have the utmost respect for Jeff's mom and dad, not so much for their son, but that's a separate issue.
Of course.
Let me clarify. They have two sons. I do have respect for Jeff's brother and sister, a lot of respect. Cool. It's Jeff that I have less respect for, but that's because he, we're going to need to bleep it out. He knows what he is. Jeff's father took up weightlifting late in life as a hobby. He, I think, is 76 years old and just set a world record by deadlifting 330 pounds. Literally did that. I saw the video, 330 pounds. So I am not scared that Jeff Darlington is going to hurt me other than with words. He would never do that. But if I hurt Jeff, Jeff's dad would probably...
He would kill you.
Yeah, and I couldn't defend myself because I'm not 330 pounds. So apparently he could deadlift me.
He's got to be our next guest.
Oh my God. So anyway, you know, I just the other part of this is that it's not like Kyle and Matt, it's not like they're the same in terms of that friendship. One has been a mentor to the other, and one is in a more secure position than the other, Kyle. Mm-hmm. One has more control over his reality than the other, Kyle. And the last distinction I would make is that Matt, and you heard him on our podcast.
Somehow he is in between the two.
Matt is in a business where everyone is cutthroat and they have to fire their friends and family members. I mean, it's brutal. But in a business where everyone's hyper-focused on winning and the task at hand and that's it, Matt is rare in that he's known, and I would say this from personal experience too, he is known for being, you know, almost like a sweetheart. Like he can be tough and firm, but people love working for him. He does right by people. He has been a good person when he works for you, by all accounts. He's, you know, he's high energy and he's got an edge and all that. But in a business of cutthroat craziness, Matt is, in my opinion, one of the universally acclaimed best dudes. So when I feel like that person is the aggrieved party, it gets my antenna up. So, you know, Kyle has kind of put some stuff out there and given his side of it a little bit publicly. I look forward privately or publicly or both to hearing what Kyle has to say about it the next time I see him. But if I were Matt, I'd be pretty upset by the way that this all went down, because it's not just that, oh, they made a call. It seemed to be something that I don't have any reported evidence on this, but Aaron seemed to be knowledgeable about that possibility by all accounts. And that would violate not just the spirit of friendship, but league rules, which is tampering. And I don't know if they actually have a tampering case, but the whole thing, you put it together, it's a lot.
You know, someone's got to do a reality TV show on this, on the inner workings of the NFL interpersonal cattiness.
Why don't we just write a scripted one? And, you know, we can't call it the NFL without NFL's blessing, but it could be the, you know, AFO, American Football Organization. But anyway, why do we give away all our good ideas for free?
Okay, so let me ask you something, because this popped up when you were talking about all of the Aaron stuff going down on that Thursday. So you're in Denver with the Broncos, and I know that you were spending some of that time with John Elway, who it seems to me, like, you know, we all know I don't know that much about football, but it seems that he, like Aaron, is one of the greatest quarterbacks.
One of the very few
to have ever done it.
Yes.
So unbelievable. So I'm wondering if you had a chance to break everything down with him and get his reaction.
I'm glad you asked. Well, first of all, John, who played at Stanford right before I got to Cal and was a legend in LA. Now, like, he was so good that he was the number one pick in the NFL draft. Not just the number one pick, like, we'll kill to have John Elway coming out of Stanford, but he didn't want to play for the then Baltimore Colts, who were about to draft him first.
And they had the first, yeah.
And he told them, kind of like, you know, we're talking about stare downs. John Elway told them, put it out there, I don't want to play for you. Don't draft me. And they were like, F you, John Elway, you can't tell us what to do. We're drafting you. And if you don't like it, you can sit out. But guess what? He was such a good baseball player that the Yankees drafted him very high to be an outfielder. So he could be like, okay, you're going to draft me and then just sit on me? Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to go play for the Yankees in the outfield.
Can you imagine having that leverage in a job negotiation?
Right, when you're 23. But on the other hand, John Elway is not only literally one of the absolute greatest quarterbacks ever to do it by far in a very small conversation, but he's apparently that good of a baseball prospect too. And probably if the guy had played soccer growing up like me in LA, he probably would be, you know, Messi. I mean, like, he's John Elway. So anyway, because of that leverage, he was able to then get traded to the Denver Broncos, where he became the most beloved athlete in Colorado history. So then John, went back and ran the Broncos as the GM/, top of the football operations chain for 10 years. So he went to 5 Super Bowls as a player, 1-2, including his last 2 years. Talk about mic drop. And by the way, after his last game, he and I sat stood on the balcony of his Fort Lauderdale hotel, rain coming down. He's smoking a cigar and drinking a beer. And that was my lead for my Sports Illustrated Super Bowl story. Wow. And it's just, you know, it's one of those moments where you're like, as I'm living this and doing my job, and I know this is like, this is going to be the greatest scene I could ever have. It's mm-hmm. a legend's last game, and it's just me and I'm with him. That's just one of those moments where you're like, might not get better access wise than this.
Yeah, that's maybe the best it's lead that could have been handed to you.
I mean, the when we were in college, the late great Dr. Z, Paul Zimmerman, who I later worked with at Sports Illustrated, who's a legend, wrote a story off the 49ers. It was, I guess, after college. The 49ers had beaten the Broncos for their fourth Super Bowl in 9 years. And he was up in Joe Montana's hotel room while the victory party raged below, watching some film of the game with Joe Montana. And we all read that lead as young sports writers. And we were like, it's impossible that anyone could ever, you know, do that. And so the fact that I was up on the balcony with John, I felt like, okay, well, it's going pretty well at this point in my life, but I digress. So anyway, so John and I go way, way back. It's interesting that you say that, because John, both as an executive who understands that star players are, you know, especially quarterbacks, are interesting to manage and how important they are. He signed Peyton Manning and then went to two more Super Bowls as an executive, won one of them, but also has been that guy. Mm-hmm. And so he's, for, you know, it's funny, like John and I haven't talked much lately. I love him. And I was driving home Thursday night after a very long day at the Broncos doing TV and reporting, and knowing I had to write till 3 a.m. still, that first story I wrote off their first night of the draft. And I just felt like talking to John, and it was late. It was probably like midnight or so. And I called him, and that whole drive back to my hotel, we talked. And I probably shouldn't reveal too many specifics, because, you know, I did interview him the next day on the record, and it's in my story that ran on Monday and all that. But it made me feel better about my convictions on how I was reading the Packers and Aaron and the situation to talk to John, because he's lived it. He's been the executive. He gets it. And he and I speak a language, I think, that, you know, goes way back, and it just made me understand a little better. And John, you know, it was just a different time when I came in covering Joe Montana, and then, you know, John Elway and Dan Marino and those guys. And back then, the franchise quarterback, the star quarterback, the franchise changer, also tended to have a magnetism about themselves that just, you know, it was just a different vibe. They were the center of everything and knew it and just exuded it, but it wasn't douchey. And it's got, people have gotten a lot more careful and weird in the, and it's understandable, I guess. But, you know, John is one of those who kicks it old school and gets it. And it was really, really interesting to have that conversation.
Got it. Interesting. I'll try to dissect that a little bit on my own. So, you know, you've been home pretty much since last March. You had one small trip to Seattle, but you've pretty much been reporting exclusively virtually from home. And this was your first work trip post double vaccination. Everyone go get vaccinated.
Yeah.
Can you just tell me a little bit about how that affected your access and your ability to write your stories?
Well, okay. First of all, it was, it was a lot. I mean, you've seen me for 14 months. I've had, you know, some responsibilities and some heavy days and some writing, but I'm in my house. Like, you know, it's not as taxing as it tended to be before then. And just going out, I mean, I didn't really party. I went out a couple of nights for dinner outdoors when I could. And I, you know, had a couple of drinks at dinner, but like didn't party. Got up early for TV every day and was on NFL Network a lot, which was great. And I wrote once till 3 a.m. And then when I got home on Saturday, I wrote again till I think 1 a.m, a much longer story. And tried to do a lot of reporting, and there was a lot to report with the draft and the Broncos specifically and the Rodgers stuff. So I was more tired because it was an abrupt, it wasn't just that I hit the road again. It was I hit the road, high energy rock and roll with TV and reporting and writing. That said, it was awesome. And, you know, it kind of reminded me that when you can be in person, if you're me, the level of reporting is much, much different. And, you know, I never took that for granted. Maybe some people out there don't get that in, you know, social media circles or whatever. That, to me, ever since the Rodman days, ever since before that, hitting it hard and getting access to people and using interpersonal connections has always been the hallmark of what I do. But, you know, it reminded me, and I hope it reminded some consumers and some rival people in the media how it is, because listen, you know, 14 months of, you know, artificial, not equality, but a more equal playing field where, you know, some people who are wannabes or maybe think they're bigger than they are in my business or fans who react to them have had the chance to kind of think that it's all the same. And yes, I have more sources than most and can draw on them via text or phone, but it's not the same. And I'm not saying me alone. There are some of us who do this, on a different level, and a lot of great beat writers around the country. The NFL is a brutally competitive landscape journalistically. A lot of great beat writers, a lot of up and coming people in digital and print and, you know, broadcast, and a lot of former players who are plugged in, a lot of, you know, legends like Peter King, my good friend who I was on TV with earlier, and people like that. But I'm just saying the level of detail in my stories and in my reporting based on one, you know, stretch of in-person interaction is different. So I would say two things. One, I believe that in the coming months and years, that 14 month gap where people like me couldn't be out on the road, that there's been a lot of underreported, things in the NFL or unreported. So I think we're going to go back and find that things happened from March of 2020 till now-ish or later that normally someone like me.
Dude, that's what I'm saying. Reality show. Maybe Matt fucked Kyle over in a way that no one knows.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's unlikely. You never know. But I just think we're going to now go back and find things that where people are like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Those two guys got into a locker room brawl after that game and we never knew about it? Right. Because there was no locker room access after that game where someone like me, and I'm not saying me alone, but someone like me would have known someone who gave them a sense that yeah. something wasn't right and we would have followed up. And I know fans like to think, oh, screw the media, keep them out. And that goes with a former president who was calling us enemies of the people. And there's this, it's a different episode, but there's this sense that secrecy is always good and it's always good. But I'm just telling you, as consumers, you don't know what you missed. And you will, I think, start to get a sense of that. And I'm just telling you, listen, I've put up with a lot of bullshit for 14 months and I by no means have had it, you know, as bad as most citizens of this earth during this horrible pandemic. My list of grievances is relative and very small. And, you know, I really, a lot of what I say is just for competitive fire and trying to drive myself in my job. That said, with that caveat, some people are going to get a fucking reality check and they're going to get it progressively and intensely over the next few months as I get my legs under me and I start hitting the road and getting with people in person and finding shit out and doing journalism and writing and broadcasting and podcasting. And we're going to take it to a different level. I may be old, but I ain't, you know, I'm vaxxed. And so I'm going to, you know, I'm going to channel Neil Young, better to burn out than it is to rust. And, you know, it's go time now. So I'll recover from the Denver trip a little. I'll chill for a couple weeks, and then I'm going to get back on an airplane, and I'm going to go see people, and I'm going to find shit out, and I'm going to report it, and it's going to be unassailable, and holy it's going to freak some people out, and maybe they'll rate my podcast, you know, 5 stars accordingly.
Yeah, you are. This is, wow, what an impassioned speech.
I'm glad you glad you were able to draw out my passion.
So nice. I have to call you out, though, because you're sitting here talking about how what differentiates you from the Twitter common folk is...
Well, this is directed more at the small level media people who would step to me on Twitter as though they are the same as me. And I know they're not. And I think deep inside they may know they're not, but I'm going to devote some energy, not them specifically, but just to making it very clear out there that this is a, you know, we're on the freeway. This is the interstate. This is not child's play. You know, you want to go play in traffic on the freeway, you better, you better be equipped to do that. And I'm going on the freeway where I belong, and I've been chilling for 14 months. And, that may just be me being, you know, the guy who psychs himself up and creates things or whatever, but, I hope everyone enjoyed these 14 months of playtime, because now it's real.
Damn. Okay. Well, I still do want to call you out on something. If you are so connected and you are so good at digging up insider information, what happened with your Mac Jones prediction?
Okay. I just got owned by my offspring, but I deserve it. Yeah. So when the 49ers made that trade, first of all, let me just I'm going to say a bunch of things that everyone could. I missed that. I did not report that they were taking Mac Jones, but I tweeted more than once that I believed the pick would be Mac Jones.
Got it.
And I was wrong.
Okay.
And that's, I don't like being wrong, and whatever. I will self-flagellate over that. Why did I feel compelled to even put it out there? So, when the 49ers made that trade, it caught the NFL world off guard. And I was super excited. And my excitement was, wow, they just had the balls to give up 3 first-round picks to move up 9 spots in the draft so that we all felt like Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson, 2 other quarterbacks, were going 1 and 2. So they were going to have their choice of another quarterback, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, or Justin Fields, all of whom were enticing in different ways. On paper, Mac Jones was probably the least enticing to the general public. My first thought was, wow, what a ballsy move. And the fact that Kyle feels so convicted about that quarterback, whoever it was, being able to run his offense the way he wants him. The team's already great. I just thought, wow, what a great thing. But 49er fans tended to freak out about it. And they were like, we should be deciding, not Kyle, which, you know, my attitude was, I think Kyle might know his offense and who could run it better than you. So it became a whole thing. But this is what I believe, Nellie. And I reported this, and I'm going to tell you, I stand by it. I believe that when they made that trade, at the time of the trade, you had to love 3 of them because you weren't sure that Lawrence and Wilson were going 1-2. So right. You had to believe 3 of these quarterbacks I'd love. I believe that 2 of them were the 2 who went 1-2, Trevor Lawrence or Zach Wilson. So that if somehow the Jags and Jets hadn't taken those guys, they would have been like, cool, we'll take Lawrence probably first and then Wilson. But I believe still that when Kyle made that trade, that he was eyeballing Mac Jones. I'm sorry. I know he said later it was Trey Lance. Mm-hmm. I believe that that's what Kyle wanted. And that's from reporting. I didn't report that technically, but my reporting tells me that Kyle wanted Mac Jones. The whole secrecy thing was weird because they didn't have to keep it a secret. Now, totally respect when teams keep their plans secret, especially in the draft, because it's a competitive advantage. This was a weird case where I saw no competitive advantage because we all knew who was going one and two, and then they were three. So they right. didn't have to hide it. They
right.
could have been like, hey, we're taking Trey Lance. Cool. And like nobody could have done anything about it. And there's no reason it would have hurt them. I don't see how it would have helped them. The only way it seemed to help them was weird. It was kind of a ha ha ha. You don't know what we're doing. Gotcha, gotcha, gotcha. Which I don't know why people get caught up in this, but I want to tell you a little story, Natalie, because it's going to bring this podcast full circle before we talk too long.
Okay.
Back in 2005, I went to a pro day at the University of California, Memorial Stadium.
Oh.
And a young man named Aaron Rodgers, who had just led Cal to a great season, got fucked out of the Rose Bowl, but was, you know,
as always,
incredible junior season. That's another episode. Just killed it on pro day. Looked like Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
And on the field, I was talking to some NFL people and they were like, oh, it's a wrap. He's going number one. The 49ers have the number one overall pick. What a great story. And they took him to lunch afterwards. It was going to happen.
Okay.
They took a guy named Alex Smith, who just retired after a heroic comeback, who had a really nice NFL career. After the pick was made, and Aaron fell all the way to 24 until the Packers surprisingly took him, even though they had Brett Favre. So he was. They thought he was going one. He went to 24.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was a crazy – that's another crazy
yeah,
story.
Yeah, okay, cool. That just registered.
After the pick, I wasn't there, but I saw the press conference, I think, later on video. Mike Nolan, then the head coach of the 49ers, who had personnel control as the coach, came out. And the first thing he said at the press conference was, hey, how many of you guys thought we were taking Aaron Rodgers? Raise your hand. Seriously, raise your hand.
Yeah.
A lot of people raise their hand. How many thought we were taking Alex Smith? Far fewer raise their hand. And basically like, ha, ha, ha.
Just kind of a weird.
Yeah, weird flex.
Like, yeah.
Like, weird ha, ha, you thought we were taking power. Aaron, we took Alex. How'd that age?
It's not great.
Right, because Alex Smith not had a fine career, and Aaron Rodgers is one of the greatest players ever to play.
So if I'm reading between the lines here,
so
maybe that example of other people.
16 years later, the Niners didn't seem to have a reason to keep it a secret. And afterwards, they were like, ha, ha, ha. I mean, they admitted it. We enjoyed it. We kept it a secret. So, okay, cool.
So it's possible that you received your information from people within the organization who were also out of the loop.
I'm not going to talk about sources, even though like people on Twitter will. I said today on Twitter, I'm not a jukebox. Like, but well, tell us this, like, whatever. Just look, you know me. I'm not going to throw myself out there with something I think is going to happen if I don't think my information is good. This is what I believe, Nally. I believe that when Kyle made the trade, he did it for Mac Jones. I believe that, understandably, after evaluating the other quarterbacks, he concluded that Trey Lance has such an incredible upside and so many great qualities, including incredible intelligence, from what I'm told, that he decided, you know what? I'm taking the swing on Trey Lance, even though I love Mac Jones. I believe that having Jimmy Garoppolo still there, so you don't have to necessarily play the raw rookie right away who went to North Dakota State and didn't play that many games in college, is a comfort zone because that team could win the Super Bowl next year. They're that good. But the one thing, and again, I'm going back out on the road. I'll find some things out eventually. Okay. But the one thing I can't tell you at the time of the recording of this podcast is this question. But I think it's a fair question. Did Kyle change his mind partly or largely because after some reports surfaced that people believed it would be Mac Jones, the outcry from fans was so severe.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
And tinged with weird overtones, like Kyle doesn't like black quarterbacks. Kyle wants a pocket passer who, you know, is a stereotypical type of quarterback. He doesn't want an athletic African-American combined with the knowledge in Kyle's heart that if you needed Mac Jones, you probably didn't have to get up to three. Whereas Trey Lance might have been gone if you didn't get to three potentially. And knowing he'd be crushed for it later if you went all the way to three to get Mac Jones and now he's not all that. But Trey Lance, who or Justin Fields turned out to be better. And by the way, you probably could have got Mac Jones. Like, he went 15 to the Patriots. You probably could have stayed at 12 and got Mac Jones. Now, listen, if Kyle loved Mac Jones and took him at three, I wouldn't have been upset because I would have said, why fuck around? We don't know who could trade up and take Mac Jones. If you love him that much, give up the three ones and get him at three. I don't care. I would have been with him on that. But a lot of people wouldn't have because mm-hmm. they think they know where guys are going to go. And it turns out they might have been right because he did last till 15. So that's what I can't tell you yet, Nat. I don't know if Kyle, you know, I believe he changed his mind. I don't know if he did change his mind. I don't know why he changed his mind. I do wonder if part or all of the reason he changed his mind was because of what happened when the world thought he was taking back.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. And also, you know, we kind of are at an inflection point in history where obviously this year has been politically and socially charged for many different reasons. And we're starting to see as a nation, as a society, certain things take precedence or like transcend what was prioritized before, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And look, Kyle named one of his kids after Lil Wayne, literally.
No, he didn't.
Oh yeah.
What's the kid's name?
His kid, what's Lil Wayne's last name? I'm spacing.
We're going to have to cut this out. Yeah.
Hold on, Google it. No, I'll admit it. It's Dwayne.
Well, fuck Lil Wayne because...
Well, that's a whole other subject. It's Dwayne...
Michael Carter Jr. Dwayne yeah. Michael Carter
so
Jr.
So Kyle named his son Carter.
Got it.
Kyle is close friends, I know, just with some people I know who are, wait for it, black. No, but I mean, I don't question Kyle's, you know, I don't question whether Kyle is on the right side of the important issues.
I know. No, that's not what I'm saying.
No, but what I'm saying is Kyle was Donovan McNabb's former pass it down guest, was Donovan McNabb's offensive coordinator. Didn't go well, didn't get along. Mm. Kyle had Robert Griffin III, a transcendent talent, and ultimately didn't get along. Mm. So I think Kyle is hyper aware of his image as it comes to some of these things. And so that's the only reason I would wonder if those overtones would add to a sense of, you know what, even though in my heart I wanted Mac Jones, I can talk myself into this other guy who's also, you know, who might have a better upside. So I don't know that for sure. I am man enough to admit that what I tweeted did not come to fruition. I stand by what I tweeted that I think when he made the trade, that's what he was doing. But, you know, he says otherwise. I don't know what's going to happen with Aaron Rodgers. I'm really, really proud of the work I did in Denver, both on broadcast and written. I'm excited that I got to go back out on the road and, you know, have a chance now to maybe push myself journalistically to a place that I like to reside. So, nice. All you posers out there who, want to play on the freeway, I think you know how I feel. All the people in our lives, mine and yours, who have not called us back, and I'm talking more about like in the professional context, who maybe take our interactions for granted and make the power dynamic one that requires us to grovel a little more. Mm-hmm. Just want to give you a shout out. Thank you.
Well, and as you know, we have no problem groveling because we want those 5 stars.
Glad you brought it back. So let's, why don't I let you take us home before we get out of here. By the way, we've thought a lot about what a great outro would be in the past. We haven't really secured any permission yet, but we thought that Digital Underground's Freak to the Industry piano outro would be like as good as it gets.
The best.
So I just want to say shout out to Shock G, who unfortunately passed away recently. Incredible rapper, helped launch the career of won Tupac Shakur, among other things, is featured in the great Tupac track, I Get Around. Freaks of the Industry is one of the greatest songs ever.
His verse is insane.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest rap verses ever. So, and Oakland's Finest. So, rest in peace, Shock G.
Yeah, so, agree, rest in peace, Shock G. But thank you guys for listening. If you made it this far, Dad, where can they find your story on the draft?
Well, NFL.com/silver houses all my stories. It'll take you to my archives. There are two draft stories there. And I just, you know, I don't think rating is a like egregious request. You know, it's free. We're not asking for money. Like they did a whole draft-a-thon. We're not doing that. We're just groveling for a rating. And if you got time, a review, unless you happen to not love this podcast, in which case it's totally fine.
It's totally fine
not to take us up on that.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.
Later.